Hey everyone, welcome into the Pipeline Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We're going to talk about plenty of Arizona Fall League today on the podcast, as well as looking ahead to Friday's deadline for adding players to 40-man rosters with the Rule 5 draft, of course, coming up soon. We'll also look ahead to 2017. Who could be the leaders as far as the Rookie of the Year race goes? First off, though, guys, it's great to be back on the podcast. It's been over a month, I think. There was this thing in October, the postseason, the World Series, and I was away, but I hear you guys did a tremendous job without me.
Yeah, who is this? Who's
I don't even know who we're talking to right now. It's whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll move right on. We're going to start things off. Jim, you got a chance to catch up with Zach Vinci down in the Arizona Fall League. Reds minor leaguer, not in their top 30, not one of their top 30 type prospect guys, but he's having a great fall in the AFL. So let's start with your discussion with Zach Vinci.
This is Jim Callis with MLBPipeline.com. I'm with Zach Vinci, Cincinnati Reds shortstop, who's in the Arizona Fall League with the Peoria Javelinas. Zach, coming into the Fall League season, what were your goals? What are you down here to work on specifically?
For me, it's just to come out and just, get better every single day. And I think just being disciplined at the plate, picking out good pitches to hit, and still having that aggressive mentality. And, it's been great so far. You know, I've gotten a lot of help from, different coaches and stuff, which is great about this league. You get different perspectives, and it's been great. I mean, just trying to go out and compete every day.
Statistically speaking, you're having as good a season as just about anybody in the Fall League. And I think coming in, you were probably more known for your defense. But with 2 days to go in the regular season, you're in the running for the batting title. You're actually in the running for the Triple Crown. I think you're one homer back and maybe a couple RBIs back. Has your offensive performance surprised even you at all? And what's clicked for you down here offensively?
I don't think it really surprised me. I knew I had it in me. I just had to put it all together, you know, mentally, physically, just make sure I've had the same mentality every single day. And, I think for me is just having that aggressive mentality up there and just having confidence every single day. I'm very fortunate to be here and playing with all these great players and stuff. And half the battle is just having confidence every day. And I think that's helped me along the way.
How much does the batting title sit there in the back of your mind or the home run champ? I mean, are you keeping track of that every day? At the end of the day, do you see what you're hitting, what Gleyber Torres is hitting? Are you aware of what's going on with that?
Not really, to be honest with you. I didn't even know I was, in the running for that until, the last couple of days. But I try not to think about that too much. I just try to go out there, put together some quality ABs, and, try to finish strong. It's been a long season and I think we're all tired, but, I try to come out and take some pride in this and finish up strong. So that's what I've been trying to do.
It seems like you've gotten, your performance has gotten better as the year has gone on. Your first couple full seasons of pro ball, okay with the bat, nothing special, kind of a slow start this year. And then you really came on the second half and you came on out here. Were there adjustments you made? What do you attribute that resurgence to?
Yeah, this is a game of adjustments. So you're trying to come out and make the proper adjustments to keep moving up. And I think, players start moving up and they eventually get to the big leagues from making adjustments because of each level. Each level gets a little bit harder, a little bit faster. So, for me, it was realizing my weaknesses and trying to hone in on those and, continue to get better every single day.
You won the Rawlings Gold Glove this year for the entire minor leagues at shortstop. What kind of honor was that? Did you even realize they had a minor league Gold Glove before you won it? And how did you find out about that?
Yeah, I didn't even know about it. I just thought it was, for the big leagues. But, it was great. My field coordinator called me randomly after the season and told me the good news. And it was a tremendous honor, I got to attribute a lot of that to my teammates and my coaching staff and, Cincinnati. They've really helped me along the way. I couldn't be more fortunate to be in the position that I'm at. And, I'm very thankful for that.
And you've played well defensively out here as well. I did the TV game Saturday on MLB Network. You made some nice defensive plays there. As a shortstop, do you think offense first, defense first? How do you evaluate yourself as a player? Do you think you look at yourself as more of a defender than a hitter, or how do you see that?
Well, at the end of the day, I'm trying to, bring the whole package out there. I think I can attribute a lot to, you know, hitting as well. I can contribute a lot. So, I mean, I'd need to have confidence on both sides of the field if I want to, you know, be the best player that I could possibly be. And it comes from my belief system. I believe in myself. And that's the biggest key, is having confidence in myself, working hard every single day, and wherever the chips land, they'll land. So that's where I, you know, I go part of it.
Thanks a lot, Vince. This has been Jim Callis with, I called you Vince, Zach Vincey. Thanks, Zach, and good luck down the stretch.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, great stuff, Jim, and great job with the name at the end there. Every time I see Zach Vincey's name, I want to call him Vince J. So,
I can pronounce it okay. I started to call him Vince at the end, and then we both kind of laughed about it because I realized what I was doing. I was trying to call him Vince Zaxy or something, but he's been very impressive down here.
Yeah, great stuff. And for the 25-year-old, a little older, but doing a tremendous job. The average, as of right now, I think 379. Great OBP as well. Let's talk about some other guys that are having a great fall. And nobody's been better than Gleyber Torres, Player of the Week last week. But really, I think it was the second time he's won that award. But he could have almost been Player of the Week almost every week. Last week, he hit 600 with a double, a triple, three RBIs. But for the fall, as of last time I checked, which was this morning, hitting over 400, 403 with a 513 on base percentage and slugging 645. Just 19 years old, obviously the Yankees got him in the Aroldis Chapman trade. Jonathan, what stands out the most to you with Gleyber Torres getting this done in the AFL at such a young age?
I mean, I think the end of that question says it all. Because, you know, Jim and I have both been conditioned to always add some sort of caveat about sample size and, you know, grains of salt in terms of offensive performance in the fall league. But I think the fact that we're looking at a young man who is still a teenager and doing what he has done, again, looking at those stats heading into the last day of the regular season, the fall league, you know, not only are the numbers good, 14 walks and 8 strikeouts against really high level of competition, and just the way he carries himself, he acts, plays, and looks like he belongs without it being, you know, overly cocky. The purists are not going to be, you know, upset that he showboats too much, but there's a clear passion for the game there. You know, he's also playing second base, you know, really for the first time, and playing it pretty well. So it's just, he has been absolutely impressive from start to finish in all facets of the game. And again, like I said, particularly in how he has carried himself throughout the fall league season.
Jim,
I don't think there's any. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, Jim, when a guy has a fall league like this, does it allow his new team now to kind of hit the accelerator on how quickly they may think about moving him? But take that wherever you want.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was going to just say, I don't think there's any question he's been the best prospect in the league here. The same thing Jonathan said about the caveat. But even if you didn't know what the numbers were, and he will wind up hitting over 400 because he's not in the lineup on the final day of the season, not scheduled to play. If you just watched him, you know, basically in just about any game, I mean, you can see the swing. I mean, he's hitting hard line drives everywhere. He looks very good at both second and short. But, yeah, I think they will probably accelerate him. And I don't think you would have sent him here if you weren't hoping to do that. You know, he hadn't played above high class A. He's one of the – he might be the youngest player in the league. I haven't scanned all the rosters to double-check that. But if you told me – I mean, he's definitely going to start next year in double A. But I could see him in, you know, if he keeps hitting like this, and the fact is, you're covering him as a prospect when he's come through the Cubs system. The scouting reports, you're hearing this guy, they get better every year. It's not like he gets to a higher level and he levels off or he kind of hits a plateau. I mean, this was a guy who, you know, you thought would hit, and you wondered, maybe it's 15 home run power early on. Now it's, you know, going to be more than that. You know, it is probably 20 or so. You know, the question was, could he stay at shortstop? I think the answer is yes. We'll see where the Yankees play him because they have middle infielders. But he keeps getting better and better, and I could see him in AAA by the end of the season. If you told me he was in the big leagues next year, like let's say the Yankees had a need for him, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. He's so good.
He's the hitter of the week for last week. The pitcher of the week was Austin Voth, Nationals number 9 prospect. He threw 5 shutout innings last week to help him get this award. Now, he's a guy who had struggled a little bit, I think, earlier on in the fall. Is that a good sign? Teams like to see that, especially for a pitcher who's already thrown a lot of innings, obviously, over the course of a year. But to maybe stumble a little bit early in the fall and then things kind of click, he figures some things out, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think without question. You know, he was one of those guys that why is he there? Mostly just because he's, you know, AAA, threw 157 innings during the regular season, and it's not like he wasn't working out of the bullpen to see what that looked like. I mean, he tacked on almost another 30 innings. But his last 3 starts were all of these shutout variety, 5 shutout innings, each of his last 3. So his November just was lights out. And I think even if it were just one good start at the end to end things on a good note, but just to see that he had that left in the tank, that he could make adjustments after getting knocked around, in 3 of his first 4 outings, is a very, very good sign, for the Nationals.
Jim, will he be up in D.C. at some point next season, you think?
Well, they've got a deep rotation. I mean, Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito have had trouble cracking it. So I think that's kind of the biggest obstacle for him isn't so much talent but opportunity. And, you know, I actually talked to him a little bit after the second of those scoreless starts because I was doing the story on the experimental baseball they used in a couple games, and he pitched one of them. And we won't necessarily get into that here, but it's up on MLBpipeline.com. Somebody wants to check that out. And he was saying from the early part of the season – he was struggling with fastball command, and that was why, you know, and he's not a guy, as Jonathan knows, too. I mean, he always has put up big strikeout numbers, even going back to college, but he's not like a guy who lights up the radar gun, and he just did not have fastball command early, and he made some adjustments. And, you know, it's not really unexpected either because, you know, these guys who come down here, you know, they've generally had, you know, 4-6 weeks off since the end of the minor league regular season. And then you got to get back into pitching gear again. And he just was not at his best early. But, yeah, he should be really enthused. The Nationals should be enthused by the way he's finished it.
All right. Well, we're recording this on Thursday. On Friday is the deadline for teams to kind of fill out their 40-man rosters. That heads into the winter meetings in early December. And the last day of the winter meetings is the Rule 5 draft. And if certain players aren't protected – and as being on the 40-man rosters, they obviously become available to be plucked away by other teams. And, Jonathan, you have a story on Pipeline.com about this right now. And I guess 12 players currently in the top 100 prospects not currently protected. You expect all of those guys to find their way onto 40-man rosters in the next 24 hours?
Yes. Next question. No, yeah, I think so. A year ago, there were 11 top 100 guys. They're all protected. I mean, these are all guys who, they're in the top 100 for a reason. You know, I think the only way you would possibly, you know, say no is if it was a guy who was really far away and was in the top 100, you know, maybe an international signee who had taken a while to get going. But even that, if it's a really talented player, you're not going to take the risk. And most of these guys are upper-level guys or are going to be hitting the upper levels in 2017. I expect all of them to. Now, you know, there is some trickle-down. You know, the Brewers have 3 guys, you know, of that top 100 who need to be protected. Lewis Brinson, Josh Hader, and Brett Phillips. Teams like that, the Phillies also, I think, you know, the teams that have accrued a ton of talent in trades, so their systems are a lot deeper, are the ones that are going to have more difficult decisions to make. You know, the Phillies, I think, have 13 of their top 30 on that must be protected or you risk losing them in the Rule 5 draft. They're not going to protect all 13. So it'll be interesting to see if they get rated a little bit come Rule 5 draft time.
Yeah, and they actually, I know, released Matt Harrison just this week to open up one more spot. I think they have 8 open spots on their 40-man heading into the chance to protect, I guess, 8 more of those 13 guys. Because of this and this deadline, Jim, does that mean the teams don't really start really looking into who they might go after in a Rule 5 draft situation until after the 40-man deadline?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, I think that you can generate a list of candidates using the internal system teams have access to, and you can look at it. And I think, hold on, I'm getting excited here. We're having a Solar Sox rally here in the bottom of the sixth. They've now scored four runs, and crack of the bat out of Avila Jimenez doubling there distracted me. But, I mean, you could do a little groundwork, or there may be guys that you're hoping are available. But, yeah, I mean, you don't seriously start breaking it all down until you know exactly who's going to be there. And like Jonathan said, I mean, you can make educated guesses. You know, the top 100 guys, yeah, they're going to be protected. But, you know, like with the Phillies, I mean, who are going to be a prime target for teams in the Rule 5 draft because of what Jonathan just laid out, you don't really know, okay, which of these guys are they going to protect or not protect? And so teams will go from there.
And the Phillies were a team that was on the other side of things a year ago and actually grabbed a couple players in the Rule 5 draft. Now it's their turn to play defense a little bit. All right, the final topic I wanted to cover with you guys is the look ahead to 2017 and possible Rookie of the Year candidates. We just saw the Rookie of the Year is announced this week, Michael Fulmer in the American League, Corey Seager in the National League. Fulmer beating out 2 months of Gary Sanchez, basically, who was so good late in the year for the Yankees. Seager was your typical start-to-finish leader, no-brainer in the National League. So when you look ahead to next year, there's some guys that jump out as obvious candidates, and Jonathan's got an article up where he covers most of these guys. But I wanted to maybe get each of you guys to, I don't want to say take a pick at who's going to do it, but maybe just your leader in November for the 2017 Rookie of the Year. And I know in the American League, Jonathan, you have, you know, Benintendi and Mankata, of course, of the Red Sox, Carson Fulmer with the White Sox, Aaron Judge with the Yankees, Bradley Zimmer with the Indians. Of that mixture of guys, who really stands out to you as the guy that's maybe in the best position when you take into account all the factors that go into a Rookie of the Year?
Well, you know, I should start up by saying that, you know, last year when I did this, Michael Fulmer wasn't, you know, mentioned.
But Corey Seager probably was.
Corey Seager was the sort of the front runner, yes. I had three, I think, of 10 total in the National League, and I had Trey Turner, who finished second, and then Steven Matz, who at least got a vote in the voting. And I was lucky enough to vote in the National League Rookie of the Year, so it was the easiest one to start my BBWA voting record with. But to me, Benintendi is the guy who, sorry, Jim, because I know he would pick Benintendi if given the choice, really, to answer any question.
I still will.
Yeah, okay. We will be in agreement, which makes for outstanding programming. You know, I think he's the guy, the combination of what he showed he can do at the highest level already. The only reason he's even on this list is because of that knee injury that knocked him out for a while. And the fact that he's going to have an opportunity. He's going to play. You know, the thing that holds me back a little bit on Mankata, other than him being a little, you know, untested still, is that there's no total apparent place that he's going to definitely play. So I think for Benintendi that, you know, the combination of his readiness and an everyday job, you know, just points in a similar direction to Seager a year ago.
Jim, we know you love Benintendi, so rather than have you also talk about Benintendi, how about a pitcher in the AL? Is Fulmer the clear-cut leader as far as that goes? Because we saw
I don't think so, because no. Fulmer was so rushed to the big leagues last year and struggled so much. I don't think I would not bank on Carson Fulmer having a big rookie year for the White Sox. And I like Carson Fulmer, but I just don't think – I mean, the White Sox, I don't understand why when you're not contending you would call the guy to the big leagues and change him from a starter to reliever and then send him back down, and he had command issues. I like him as a long-term prospect. I don't like him as a prime Rookie of the Year candidate in the American League. I don't know if there is a clear, obvious pitcher – in the American League, you know, we've talked in the past about how if you look at the top 100 list, what, like 22 of the top 25 guys on that list are hitters. I'm just trying to think if there's I'll tell you who I'd go with as the pitcher would be Brent Honeywell. You know, we'll tie back to the Fall League a little bit. But, you know, that would come down to opportunity for him, too. You know, if the Rays don't make a trade and open up a rotation spot, maybe not. But Brent Honeywell has been one of the best pitchers down here. He's pitched well everywhere he's been in the minors, including Double-A and High Class A this year. So if I'm picking a pitcher, I'll go off the board, and I'll go Brent Honeywell if I have to take a pitcher in the American League.
Shattering my hopes of back-to-back Fulmers as Rookie of the Year winners. All right. Onto the National League, and there's more.
Because you know, if I don't pick the guy, he can't win the award. So your hopes are definitely shattered.
There's more pitching options, I think, in the National League as far as clear-cut guys who are going to have an opportunity as well. Jonathan, you have Giolito and Tyler Glasnow and Alex Reyes on your short list here. And then there's, of course, the up-the-middle tandem in Atlanta. Who has the best shot out of that group? To me, it seems like Swanson's in a great spot because people know that name already so successfully for the way he started, and he has that job ready to go.
Yeah, I think I would say Swanson is the front runner, elusive this group. There were a lot of National League candidates. I put Ozzie Albies in there. You've got Hunter Renfroe and Manny Margot in San Diego. You can make a case, especially in terms of that whole opportunity thing and a job, that maybe that would make more sense. But to me, Swanson kind of, that was a curiosity when he was brought up. Wasn't necessarily rushed in the same way that Carson Fulmer was, but it was another one of those, why'd they do that? Now, they're trying to build some energy and excitement around the team. And I think we all agree that he would at least, stay afloat, hold his own. But he performed well. He hit well, extra base pop, showed what he can do at shortstop. I think he's going to use that as his foundation. He finished just one at bat shy of the cutoff. So again, another guy who just barely is rookie eligible, but he is. And I think that he's just going to take what he did last year and use that and hit the ground running at the start of 2017.
Jim, I assume that you agree.
I do. I would go with Swanson. I think it's also easier, Michael Fulmer aside, to pick the hitter because, one, I think it's easier sometimes to find a spot in a lineup than it is to get a long leash in the rotation. But if I had to go with a pitcher in the National League of the guys, and there's some interesting ones, I'd probably go with Alex Reyes. We talked about Voth earlier in the broadcast, and he's not a top prospect. But that Nationals rotation is crowded, and they never really gave Giolito more than one start in a row to prove what he could do this year. So I'm not so sure that Giolito is going to, have a great opportunity at the beginning of the season. Really like Tyler Glasnow, but as we always seem to talk about when we talk about Tyler Glasnow, you talk about how great this stuff is, and it misses bats, and you talk about how sometimes he doesn't command said stuff. And so, I could see him maybe having a little bit of a rougher adjustment to the big leagues, getting acclimated than Reyes would. But I think Reyes is going to have the opportunity. And while his command still needs some fine-tuning, you could really – he looked good, very good at times in September. So, I will second the Swanson pick. But if we're looking for a rookie pitcher in the National League, I would take Alex Reyes out of a very strong field.
All right, great stuff. We'll take a look back on these picks early in the season maybe and get some official picks from you guys in February or March. All right, well, it was great to be back on the Pipeline Podcast. That's going to do it for this edition. For Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in.